Saudi Arabia's Operation Decisive Storm, an aerial campaign in which their stated aim, as they said, was to stop the Ansarullah movements and the Houthis. Saudi Arabia announced that it had ended, yet hours afterwards, and through today, it has continued. Saudi Arabia also announced Operation Renewal of Hope, that would focus on the political process. So bomb first, then talk? Is that Saudi Arabia's version of a political solution? And is that with the approval of its ally, the United States? And finally, was this invasion, which claimed the lives of at least 1,000 civilians, according to Human Rights Watch, successful in the first place? This is Press TV's The Debate.
Saudi Arabia's warplanes have bombed various locations in Yemen, despite the kingdom's announcement of an end to its aerial campaign that has lasted for 27 days. Riyadh says it's achieved the goals for which it has attacked Yemen. Saudi Arabia's stated aim was to check the advance of Ansarullah fighters and their allies and to bring back to power fugitive former President Abd Rabbu Mansur Hadi. Despite the invasion, neither Hadi has been reinstated nor the Ansarullah are on the retreat.
And you can compare the goals before the attack on Yemen and after. Before, they said they want to bring Hadi back and to bring his legitimacy, as they call it, back. But after, they haven't mentioned the new goals, or after it, I mean, what they said they have achieved. They haven't mentioned Hadi. And it was all about that they took out the threat that was that Yemen was causing against Saudi Arabia. So it was all about Saudi interest in distracting the Yemeni army, because they were afraid that when they saw the Yemeni army united itself with the Popular Committee and with Ansarullah and their succession in clearing one of the strongest hold of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, which was Rada' and Al-Bayda, they were afraid of that this army, with this amount of weapons they have, that they're going to become like fighters as similar to Ansarullah, with a strong belief in defending the country.
On Sunday, Ansarullah's leader Abdul Malik al-Houthi said the main goal of the Saudi aggression is to empower al-Qaeda again.
It's a very important part, and a main goal of the aggression on Yemen is to enable al-Qaeda once again to seize control of this country.
Ansarullah movement says it's ready for a UN-brokered political dialogue in Yemen only after Saudi Arabia fully halts its attacks against the country. Ansarullah says Saudi Arabia must also lift its naval and air blockade. On Wednesday, Yemenis filled the streets of Sana'a to voice support for Ansarullah. The movement has been struggling to bring an end to Saudi interference, which it blames for long-time problems in Yemen. With Ansarullah and its supporters promising to push for their legitimate demands, and Saudi Arabia declaring a new phase in its operations against Yemen, things seem to be complicated. This comes as the impoverished country has become poorer due to massive destruction of its infrastructure by weeks of air attacks. 27 days of Saudi bombardments have also left more than 2,700 people dead, mostly civilians.
Well, our guest for this edition of The Debate, journalist and political analyst Hafsa Kara Mustafa, joins us from London. We have director of the Middle East Forum, Daniel Pipes, who joins us from New York. I'd like to welcome you both, Daniel Pipes. Let me first start with you. Saudi Arabia last night announces an end to this aerial bombardment in this operation, and then says that it's going into a political phase, and then hours later, it starts bombing again. What do you make of that?
Well, I think the immediate explanation is that the Houthi army took over, militia took over a brigade camp from the government, and so the Saudis panicked and decided to go back into war footing. But the larger point, I believe, is that the Saudis have never done anything like this before and are rather unprepared for it. And we can see both in their tactics and in their policies that they really are novices at this. They're doing something new, and they're exploring how to do this. It's not very impressive.
Well, that's an interesting statement coming from Daniel Pipes there, Hafsa Kara Mustafa, which, if it is indeed true, came at a cost of, well, we have at least 1,000 civilians that have been killed, and many sources indicating that this could have, and still may very well, lead into a wider regional conflict.
Well, I think this indicates that Saudi Arabia really has failed on all fronts. I mean, the first aims were to bring back the refugee, the president who'd fled, and to stop Houthi advances. On both these fronts, they've obviously failed terribly. So I think it's an operation to sort of attempt to save face. But obviously, this is not going the right way for Saudi Arabia, and it's not surprising. Saudi Arabia doesn't have a very efficient army. It was planning on support from countries such as Pakistan, and that hasn't delivered. So obviously, all their stated aims at the beginning of this war campaign, this disastrous campaign that is costing the lives of Yemeni civilians, is not going well. And I think we're seeing the Saudis are now going all over the place, attempting to sort of plaster their failures. But of course, the wider implications are yet to be seen. All that we can see at this particular moment in time is that grave violations of human rights are being carried out, war crimes are being carried out, and of course, as ever, with the support of Western governments, namely with the US.
Well, Daniel Pipes, let's expand a little bit more about what you said there, that the Saudi Arabians are new at this and they don't exactly know what and how to execute their strategy. But I'm assuming, and based on what we have, information's out there, that the US has provided at a minimum intelligence support and logistics support for the Saudis. I would guess that the Americans were consulted. So couldn't the Americans have led them down a path that perhaps would obtain their goals, their stated goals?
From what I understand, the Obama administration has different views on this, is divided. First of all, the Obama administration is very keen on the Lausanne Agreement and is focused on that and doesn't really want to have trouble with the government of Iran. But secondly, it wants to support its Saudi ally and encourage the Saudis not to be too scared of the Iranian-backed forces by supporting them. In other words, hey, Riyadh, don't make too much trouble on the Lausanne Agreement. We'll back you here. But if you look at the statements coming out of Washington today, they're completely incoherent. Some of the official spokesmen are saying that the presence of an aircraft carrier group in the Red Sea is to maintain the freedom of navigation. Others are saying that it's to prevent Iranian arms from going into Yemen. I think this is symptomatic of the fact that whether it be on the Saudi side or the American side or the Pakistani or the Egyptian, there's a certain amount of incoherence. This was done in a panic. And I don't think the U.S. is leading Saudi Arabia into this. The U.S. is trying to figure out what its position is. The U.S. government hasn't yet figured that out. So in general, it's panic and incompetence so far. Now, it's worth reminding you that the viewers that there was a precedent for this some 50 years ago when the Saudis similarly supported the existing government against revolutionary forces, at that time supported by Egypt, and the Saudis eventually prevailed. So while then and now the Saudis have started off badly, I wouldn't count them out. Yemen is a very important country for them, and they will probably get their act together and do a better job in the future, though the first month has been anything but impressive.
Well, the question still remains, Hafsakar Mustafa, that the aims of the Saudis were not achieved. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that they did achieve was the ability of Al-Qaeda to be enhanced. Ironically, the Houthis, or the Ansarullah movement, and the Houthis who were fighting Al-Qaeda and were successful, well, they're the ones that supposedly was the goal of the Saudis to eliminate. But Al-Qaeda now has come back. So isn't that a point for the U.S. to have considered? Or is that something perhaps, along with Saudi Arabia, the U.S. wanted?
Well, that really is the big question, because we're seeing that whatever operations, military operations, are carried out with the support of the US, we're seeing that in fact Al-Qaeda and its affiliates are actually growing. So obviously in the aftermath of the invasion of Iraq and the American presence, we've seen the emergence of ISIS, then with the US supporting militarily the Syrian opposition, which obviously was Jabhat al-Nusra, which morphed into ISIS, that sort of that's helped these groups. We've seen that the operation in Libya transformed Libya into a safe haven for these groups. So really, wherever you're seeing a Gulf-US alliance in the Middle East, it very clearly favors the emergence of Al-Qaeda and all these other groups. It's very difficult to actually distinguish here because we're seeing a very, very clear pattern of US and Gulf Alliance actually aiding and allowing these various groups to emerge and to develop very freely. And this particular operation in Yemen is a case in point. They were at one point retreating, and just as they were weakening, that's when the Saudi operation took place in order almost to give them the support and the cover that they needed in order to come back in force. And we're seeing that. Now, although obviously it hasn't been a victory for the Saudis and a defeat for the Houthis, we do see that this has given cover and a sort of renewed hope for Al-Qaeda to actually re-emerge as a force to be reckoned with.
Very well. Quick time out right now. Let's take a listen to some of the viewer comments and we'll come back to the debate momentarily.
Why doesn't Saudi Arabia focus on the important enemy called Zionist? House of Saud gained hatred for themselves. They gained humiliation and disgrace for harming Muslims. They gained the image of having a Zionist face. What does Press TV get from posting issues that create division among the Ummah? Laughing out loud, putting blame on Press TV? Don't you want to talk about Saudi Arabia's atrocities? Laughing out loud. Rest in peace, this kind of mentality. They have achieved nothing other than being good marionettes for the puppet masters in Tel Aviv and Washington. They also please the corrupt and perverse clerics who love to spill Muslims' blood and destroy world heritage sites. They have shed the blood of innocent Yemenis, including children, and destroyed Yemen, bringing Houthis and their backers to their knees. Saudis have lost. They have failed to make Houthis kneel. Congratulations to Houthis for standing up to American puppets. They left a scar of hatred which cannot be healed for a long time.
Just some of the viewer comments there. Daniel Pipes, so what now? I mean, Saudi Arabia says they've entered a political phase. At the same time, some are saying, well, no, the aerial campaign obviously hasn't stopped, which we can see that it hasn't. But ultimately, they want to bring Hadi back, I think. We don't know really for sure. What do you think is next in their maps?
Well, before answering your question, I'd like to address a different point, which is human rights abuses, war crimes, and so forth. Indeed, the Saudis and their allies have engaged in violence against Yemeni civilians, but let's not forget that the Houthis were the ones who really began this campaign against civilians, and that the moral onus, the real moral problem, is what the Houthis have done. Back to your question. I believe there's disarray on the Saudi side. They do not know what they're doing at this point. They know they don't want the Houthis to get control of the country. They are using the assets they have on the ground, their allies, domestically and internationally. They're using military force. But I think that the question you have asked is one that is now very heated, both in Riyadh and to a lesser extent in Washington. What's the objective? What can realistically be attained here? And I expect that this will be a fairly long war, as it was in the 1960s. I expect this will last not for days, weeks, or months, but for years. That something has begun on the 26th of March that will continue for a long time. And I see it as a reflection of a larger war between the Iranian-backed forces and the Saudi-backed forces. And I would argue, contrary to Ms. Kara Mustafa, that with the exception of Libya, which is a different story, especially in Iraq, but also in Syria and Yemen, it is the Iranian-backed forces that initiated the violence that has caused the Saudis to come in on the Sunni side. I wish the Iranian government were less aggressive in these countries, and I wish the Saudis were not responding.
Do you have a response to that, Hafsa Kara Mustafa?
It's almost as if I don't really, because the facts on the ground are very clear. Who is funding these terrorist groups? I mean, it's abundantly clear who's been funding them, which is Saudi government. and who has actually wreaked havoc across the Middle East. The only time we've seen Iran actually support a country, a sovereign Arab nation that was illegally invaded by Israel, was obviously when Iran supported Hezbollah. Now Iran has made no secret of its alliance with Hezbollah, and I think most Arabs were very thankful for that alliance, because actually no other country came in aid of the south of Lebanon when it was legally invaded by Israeli forces. For the rest, I think Iran, just as Russia, in fact, continues to enjoy bilateral relations with the government of Syria, and that is a perfectly legitimate thing to do. But there is a very clear difference between actually having normal relationships with an official government and what the Gulf countries are doing, which is actually funding and supporting terrorists and mercenaries who are going to kill civilians and destroy infrastructure and shrines and places of worship of various religions, which is what we've seen happen at the hands of the terrorists from Jabhat al-Nusra, from ISIS, etc. So I think the real culprits here are very much on the Sunni Gulf side and not on Iran, which seems to have become a sort of bogeyman in the Gulf Arab lexicon, which is to actually put the blame on Iran, when clearly Iran is not responsible for all these crimes that have been committed across the region. Now, coming back to your issue about what happens next in Yemen, I would almost agree with Mr. Pipes that this is going to be a long haul, not because there's actually an end game or an end vision, but precisely because the plan is eternal chaos and destruction. Saudi Arabia has actually revealed itself to be very much on a par with the Zionist regime, which is to actually cause havoc and destruction on a long-term basis, regardless of the consequences, and just keep the situation and the region in constant turmoil. Regardless of the number of civilians killed, regardless of the destruction of infrastructure, and regardless of the tensions within the community, within the Muslim community and the wider Arab world as a whole.
Do you agree with that, Daniel Pipes?
I'm no apologist for the Saudi regime. I would note that the Iranian government has predominant influence in Iraq, in Syria, in Lebanon, and now in Yemen. It is the Iranian government that is on the move. It is the Iranian government that has overseen, especially in Iraq, the Shiite resurgence and the Sunni rebellion against it. It is the Iranian government that has been moving the Middle East, not the Saudis. The Saudis are essentially reactive. They have the good life in Saudi Arabia. They don't want changes. They're protecting themselves from what they perceive, and I agree, are Iranian aggressive moves all over the region.
Well, when you talk about Iranian influence or Iranian, the Iranian factor, let's put it that way, Daniel Pipes, let me ask you this. 2011, it wasn't Iran that was the cause of the Arab Spring. And you remember Yemen, there was a popular uprising. But what happened? That got dragged on. And at the end, there was a one-man presidential candidate. I mean, Hadi went and we saw him in the ballot box, put down the vote, obviously voting for himself. So Iran stands behind what I think is the notion that Saudi Arabia and some of the other Persian Gulf countries don't like. That's the notion of democracy, because they're regimes. Because Iran is standing behind what the popular vote in Yemen is. And people want, they like the Ansarullah movement. They didn't like Hadi, which is obviously prior to that Saleh. Isn't that what the problem is here with Iran?
I'll agree with you that the Saudis are hardly Democrats and Mr. Hadi is hardly a Democrat. I'd also remind you of June 2009 in Iran, when the democratic process was clearly thwarted by fraud. So democracy is something in the Middle East that one aspires to but generally doesn't find. The really important thing is that the Saudi regime is status quo oriented, is wanting to keep things quiet and not in a flame, not changing. The Iranian government wants to see change, and it has led to change. Now, granted, they took advantage in Tehran of the 2011 Arab upheavals. They didn't cause them, I agree with you, but they took advantage. And we've seen in several countries now an active Iranian presence, including in Bahrain, which we haven't mentioned. This is a very, very obvious and important pattern of Iranian aggression.
Okay, Hafsakar Mustafa, by the way, Daniel Pipes, 2012, when the elections took place in Iran, 70% plus turned out. Hafsakar Mustafa, the Iranian factor is in the conversation right now. Is there a chance that there's going to be a push somehow? Iran has made its move, four-point peace plan to the UN. We haven't seen diplomatic moves from the other side. I'm not too sure if the other side would be just Saudi Arabia, its coalition, or Saudi Arabia and the U.S. Why aren't they making diplomatic and political moves?
Well, this is the problem. I mean, on the one hand, they've announced that they've suspended the military operations. They've announced that they would be engaging in diplomatic talks, but on the other hand, they're bombing once again. So it's very difficult to negotiate in these circumstances. And again, I will draw a parallel with Israel, which actually bombs first and then claims to want to talk, but actually doesn't talk. So we're seeing a strong parallel. Can I just point out that the Iraq-Iran relations have actually become very close, if anything, as a result of the American invasion of Iraq in 2003. And it's quite natural for Iraq, for Iran rather, after having been attacked by Iraq, by Saddam Hussein's Iraq in the 80s, to actually want to nurture very close relationships with a major neighbor. So there's nothing particularly wrong or untowards in seeing a close relationship between Iraq and Iran. And if anything, close relationships between the Persian world and the Arab world is something that we should aspire to, because that will bring regional stability, which we're not seeing at the moment. Again, this constant supposed threat coming from Iran, which we're not seeing on the ground, is making the situation much worse, and it's being used as an argument to actually justify attacks such as the one we're seeing in Yemen at the hands of Saudi Arabia. We've heard that supposedly Iran plays an active role in Yemeni affairs, but what we know for a fact, whether that argument is true or not, Iran hasn't been bombing Yemen for over a month and causing the death of 1,000 Yemenis. That is a fact.
And the other fact is we've run out of time. Thank you very much for that. Journalist and political analyst Safsikar Mustafa there from London. And thank you very much, Daniel Pipes, director of the Middle East Forum there, talking to us from New York. And thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate from Yikovetapwe and the entire team in the capital, Tehran. It's goodbye.